Tonight our learning is sponsored by Karen Vetterbush in memory of her grandfather Menachem Mendel ben Natali Meir Zichrono Livracha, by Marianne Styler in memory of her father Yehuda ben Zvi Zichrono Livracha, and by Barbara Teller in memory of her mother Rachel Bas Yitzchak Zichrono Livracha. This is going to be our final shiur of the Zman. In Elo we will restart with Maseches Gittin. But for now, we have one final shiur on matters of Shemitah. The truth is, there are many actually very central Shemitah sugyas that come up in Maseches Gittin. So I had half a mind maybe to use that as our transition to Maseches Gittin. So Gittin Daf Lamed Vav is all about Shemitah. Shemitah Zoraisa, Shemitah Zorabanan, and some other sugyas there, Hefker based on Hefker, Prusbul, especially as we head towards the end of the year and Prusbul becomes a pretty central topic. Maybe we'll use that as our artificial transition to Maseches Gittin to bring us from Shviyas to Gittin. We'll see. I haven't decided yet. But certainly, narrowly speaking, this is going to be our final shiur on Yanei Shemitah, and it's going to be our final shiur on the topic that we've been discussing extensively, which is the obligation of women in the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah. So far, we've analyzed extensively two arguments of the Minchas Chinuch to say that women should be obligated in the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah, even though it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. We started with the argument of saying that any mitzvah saseh shazman grama that's not begufa, that's not incumbent on her person, she is obligated in. That was the Minchas Chinuch's reading of the Ritva and Maseches Kiddushin. And we noted the assumptions there regarding the nature of the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah and regarding his reading of the Ritva as well. And then last week, we looked at, I think it was the last 2 weeks, certainly last week, we looked at his argument that because it overlaps with the mitzvah lo saaseh, which she is obligated in, because she's obligated in the mitzvah lo saaseh, the Minchas Chinuch wanted to argue that she should be obligated in the mitzvah saseh as well. And we took that even further than the Minchas Chinuch through an analysis of the topic of Esei Docha Losa Esei Va'asei, and some of the ramifications of that. Here, I just want to present one possible third option for why women are obligated, should be potentially obligated in the Mitzvah Seyev Shemitah, one that notably does not appear in the Minchas Chinuch, and we'll see why, but potentially emerges from other Gedolei Achronim, and potentially from other Rishonim as well. And I guess, before we even see any of the sources, if you were to think just intuitively, you have the mitzvahs asay of Shemitah, mitzvahs asay lishbos, me'avodas karka, right? To rest from working the land, or to ensure a restful character for the land, right? That we discussed extensively, that was our first topic. So you have this mitzvahs asay. It's clearly zman grama, right? Because it only appears once every 7 years, at least intuitively it seems like a mitzvahs asay shazman grama. We consider the possibility that because of Kedusha Shvias, maybe it's not a Mitzvah Saseh Shazman Grama, but it certainly seems like a Mitzvah Saseh Shazman Grama. We didn't explore that fully, but we did note that in passing. So, is there any reason intuitively why women should be obligated, if it seems to fit the paradigm of Mitzvah Saseh Shazman Grama beyond everything that we've been discussing? Is there any way that this Mitzvah Saseh clearly stands out from other Mitzvah Saseh?
So, I think when we started, we were talking about how the mitzvah is that the land shouldn't work.
Correct.
You have to help make sure that happens.
Right.
So it's not really on the person, but it's...
That was like the first answer of the Minchas Chinuch. That is not begufa, right? That was the first answer of the Minchas Chinuch. Is there anything else, potentially?
Well, the other way around, I think Joel was saying, if it's incumbent on us to let the land rest, it's not necessarily our mitzvah, right? Am I understanding right your question? It's not a mitzvah on us, it's a mitzvah on the land.
So why would women be obligated?
Well, because...
it's not on them at all. Right. Again, is that different from the Minchas Chinuch's first suggestion that it's not begufa, that's not incumbent upon her, it's on the land, and therefore she's obligated?
Well,
right? Moshe, is that not precisely what... right?
Did you already say that
yeah, that's what we discussed last week.
If a woman different. Owns the land, she wouldn't have to, you know, do the mitzvah. A woman can own land?
For sure.
Okay. Ownership of the land is...
right, but again, she's certainly obligated in the Losa Asay. She certainly can't work the land, but is she obligated in the Mitzvah Asay? That's our question.
Well, okay, so here's my question where I think I was going is, right, a non-Jew, right, are we supposed to stop a non-Jew from...
We discussed that extensively, right?
But coming back to the woman
right
now, how can she be worse, I don't want to say that. take it the wrong way, than a non-Jew working the land. She can't be. So if a non-Jew can't work the land...
No. It's certainly true that if you hold that a Jewish adult male is obligated to stop a non-Jew from working the land, he would also be obligated to stop a Jewish woman from working the land. The question is, does she have that obligation? In other words, certainly anyone who has... Exactly, right. Or to not... Right, exactly. That's the question that we're dealing with.
Can we argue that it's not Zman Grama because it's the entire year?
It's 1 year out of seven.
But when you look at cycles, you look at a year, right? An entire year. She's obligated an entire year.
It's an interesting argument, but
would you argue that in her entire life, she would only have to do something once... Never do it
again. What's the
right? But the produce is usher forever.
So the produce being usher forever is again an argument that the Menchas Chinuch marshals, that perhaps the produce being usher forever is enough. I think again we analyze this in the context of the Machlokes between the Rambam and the Rush about Beged Laila, right? We did touch on this tangentially as to whether when it comes to tzitzis, right? How do we understand tzitzis being a mitzvah seishas ban grama? Is it that you're only obligated in tzitzis during the day? Or is that daytime begadim, right? A garment that is designated for daytime usage is obligated in tzitzis. And pajamas, which are designated for nighttime usage, are not obligated in tzitzis. So if you wore pajamas during the day, you'd be exempt. If you wore daytime clothing at night, you would be obligated, right? That's machlokes in the Rambam and the Rush. And whether or not that's sufficient to render something a mitzvah seishas ban grama would impact your suggestion, Daniel, as to whether the mere fact that the peiros are always usher b'kedusha shvias or always retain the status of kedusha shvias, would that be enough to render this a mitzvah seishas ban grama? So yeah, that's a possibility. That's a possibility that we touched on in the past. But I'm asking something even more simple, just structurally. Think about it. How does this mitzvah saseh differ from all other mitzvah saseh? How is this one not like the others? Good. Ordinarily speaking, when you have a mitzvah saseh, we're telling you to get up and do something. How do you violate a mitzvah saseh? You violate a mitzvah saseh passively, right? I'm supposed to put on tefillin, and I neglect to put on tefillin. I'm supposed to pick up a lulav and esrog. I don't pick up a lulav and esrog. I'm supposed to eat matzah. I don't eat matzah. Ordinarily speaking, you violate a mitzvah saseh through passivity. Here, how do you violate the mitzvah saseh? Through activity. I pick up my shovel, I pick up my hoe, and I start working the land, and then I'm over the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah. That is what we call a lav haba michlal aseh. Lav haba michlal aseh. And the question becomes, what is the status of this notion of lav haba michlal aseh as far as mitzvah saseh as man grama is concerned? Technically speaking, in the Torah, it is formulated as a mitzvah saseh, but it is violated through passivity. I'm sorry, what did I say? It's formulated as an aseh, but it is violated through activity, the way you would violate a prohibition, right? So how do we perceive that lahalacha? Do we go by the formulation that is provided in the Torah? Or do we go by the manner through which you violate, in which case it should be treated as a losa aseh? That is a very fundamental question that we will explore briefly tonight. And it's not only on this. This is just one example. You have lots of other examples. We'll see in source number 4, the Rambam discusses the mitzvah we can just read it for a moment. We'll return back to it soon. The mitzvah lamenches hishetziva hakoin gadol sheyisa besula. The mitzvah for a kohen gadol to marry a besula, who amru yisparach v'hu yisha b'vsulah ha'yikach. He should marry a besula. Now, how does he violate that? He violates that. The real mitzvah is not for him to get married. He needs to be married for Yom Kippur, but 364 days of the year, the kohen gadol doesn't need to be married. It's really an isur for him to marry an almana, right? A kohen gadol is not allowed to marry an almana. Yet it is formulated as v'hu yisha b'vsulah ha'yikach. You won't find a los asay in the Torah that's formulated in the los asay form. It's formulated in the asay form. Or take another example. This is a very prominent example, which we're not going to get into right now, but maybe will be the subject of a future Shabbos Shuvah drasha. The prohibition of fasting on Yom Kippur. How is that formulated in the Torah? Does it say? The Torah doesn't say lo sochlu v'lo sishtu. It doesn't say that you shouldn't eat on Yom Kippur. It says v'ini semes nafsho seichem. You shall afflict yourselves on Yom Kippur, and that serves as the source for the isra achila ushtia. So you have this prohibition that's formulated as an essay. Is that formulation significant? Certainly, Mori v'Rabbi Rav Rosenzweig thinks in the context of Yom Kippur, it is very, very significant that it is formulated as a mitzvah essay. But really, we could ask generally, more broadly, in all of these cases, how exactly do we assess the lav haba miklal aseh.
Does it make a difference if there's also a lav to go with it?
That goes back to our discussion from last week, potentially.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm saying, even like, I guess now I'm working with, even if we assume that the essay stands on its own and is not impacted by the lav, right? Again, that was central to our discussion last week. But even if we assume that they exist independently, perhaps we could say that this essay in and of itself, simply by virtue of the fact that it needs to be actively violated, right, is considered more akin to a lav than it is to an essay.
Can you also argue that it's not smart grama, even though it's on the body?
Why not? Because you said because it's a year. That's what you said before.
Well, not just that. No, because what you're saying, because it requires you to do something as opposed to not doing something. If you just,
it's still confined to Zman, right? It's still confined to that year of Shemitah.
Right, but we said Zman Grama only applies if it's on your goof, right?
But the Menachas Chinuch was arguing that the principle of mitzvah saseisha Zman Grama Nashim Peturos is only when it's on Gufa Shel Isha. That was the Menachas Chinuch's argument. Right. He wasn't saying that the status of Zman Grama hinges on Gufa. Zman Grama means Zman Grama.
So in this case, she'd be Peturos. Patur, even though it's on her goof, because she doesn't have to do anything.
That's exactly what we're arguing. In other words, it's not a function of gufa or not gufa. It's a function of the fact that it's a lav haba miklal asay. That's precisely what we're suggesting right now. That perhaps the fact that it's a lav, rather again, the fact that it practically expresses itself as a prohibition rather than an imperative, is sufficient to render it a los asay, or at least akin to a los asay, such that women would be obligated. That's precisely the suggestion. So here we have a treatment of the issue. You'll see a basic treatment of the issue in sources 3, 4, and 5. Let's go through them quickly. Tshuvah Chasam Sofer, Chelak Aleph, Simen Kuf Nun. Chelak Aleph of the Tshuvah Chasam Sofer is devoted to Orach Chaim. Like in the Igros Moshe, you'll see Orach Chaim, Chelak Aleph, Orach Chaim, Chelak Beis, etc. That's not how the Tshuvahs of the Chasam Sofer are organized. The Tshuvahs of the Chasam Sofer, all of Chelak Aleph is on Orach Chaim. So this is equivalent to saying Chasam Sofer, Orach Chaim, Simen Kuf Nun. He says as follows, V'akoshya Rishona, Lo matzasi mitzvah saseh shazman grama denashim peturos, ela ba'aseh. I think that when it comes to this mitzvah saseh shazman grama, women are only exempt when it's a true mitzvah saseh. Aval belav haba miklal aseh, when you are dealing with something that is formulated in the Torah as an aseh, but it expresses itself practically in its observance as a lo saseh, she'eno doma letfilin matzav ha'akel, it's not similar to the paradigms in the Gemara of Mitzvah Seish Hasman Grama, Tefillin Matzvah Hakel. What does the Chasam Sofer say? Chayavos. He argues that women are obligated. He says, okay, Eis lo matzasi dimyon. He says, I haven't really found an example of this, but he comes up with something that's not quite our example, but it's interesting that it happens to be something akin to it. What is an example? Doing business dealings with peroshvias, velechol achar abiur, and eating those peroshvias after biur. Biur is not, we didn't really get into the sugya biur. That's a very fundamental sugya too. Biur, there reaches a point when you must do something to your peroshvias. Let's say for simplicity's sake, you need to get rid of your peroshvias, right? And that's a mitzvah saseh, right? Uviartaz. It's a mitzvah saseh that you need to get rid of your peroshvias. So it's a mitzvah saseh that she needs to get rid of it, right? She ate it afterwards. Shulava bami klal asay, uzman grama uvade nashim masuros ka nashim. So the prohibition there, the Chasam Sofer is assuming that the prohibition there is to eat it after zman biur. He's assuming that you don't have enough. This is a major machlokus between the Rishonim, the Rambam and the Ramban, as to what exactly biur entails. What exactly do you need to do for biur? But the Chasam Sofer is assuming that it's just a prohibition of eating it after that time point of biur, whatever that time point may be, point in time may be. And we find that nashim, that women are obligated. So you see, you have another mitzvah saseh, lava bami klal aseh, again, something that's formulated in mitzvah saseh, but expresses itself as a lav, where women are obligated. V'chanami lachem lo lukbo, nashim mazhar, zafa bisha zman grama, he gives a whole host of other examples. Adol chomer migof halav, de lo saseh malacha, kim shu nidcha gam lachem, he nidcha ilav de halav olim, imkein gama aseh de lachem, de asi machmasi lo nidcha. So again, then he gets to the particular example that he's dealing with here. But the point is that, according to the Chasam Sofer, Alava bami klal asay, women are obligated in. Women are obligated in. That is the principle of the Chasam Sofer. Okay? And I'm suggesting that that could potentially be another reason why women are obligated in the mitzvahs asay of Shemitah. If women are obligated in alava bami klal asay, and proposition A, the asay of Shemitah is alava bami klal asay. Proposition B, women are obligated. Lav avami klal asay is considered like a los asay. C, women are obligated in mitzvahs los asay, then she should be obligated, women should be obligated in the mitzvahs asay of Shemitah. Now, I think there are three potential ways of rejecting that argument, the argument that I'm projecting right now. Note, the Minchas Chinuch himself never said that women should be obligated in the mitzvah saseh of Shemitah because of lav habami klal aseh. He never marshaled this argument. I think there are three ways that one can potentially reject the argument that builds on each of the propositions or each of the assumptions that goes into the argument itself. But before we try to reject the argument, questions. There are questions.
Chassam Sofer clearly he articulated this principle, and he couldn't find any examples.
So, right.
And he came close, you know, with Schor of a pair of Shvias. The fact that he didn't say it, doesn't that tell you something?
Okay, so what do you?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure why.
So, Dana, give me at least two ways that we could reject this Svara. At least two, based on what you just said. Okay, it's true. It's true, right? But I think it, even that ha'ara gives us at least two ways to reject the argument that I just said. Goes back to something that we've discussed many times. Two ways of rejecting a hava mina, right? There's always, almost always, at least two ways of rejecting a hava mina.
One assumption we're making is that it's passive. There's no activity.
Okay.
Or it's active. That's not passive like other.
Or to violate it.
Right.
It
was
the violation is active. Correct.
So is there a possibility of violating it passively?
You tell me. I wasn't even going to go there first. That was going to be my third possibility. But you're getting ahead of me.
Like I said, we talked about the non-Jew who's doing the work.
Good, excellent. Okay, fine.
So let's say I don't do anything.
So good. Stop. Perfect. So we'll circle back to that. That was going to be my third ha'ara. Let's just get even more basic than that. I think you're correct, Nathan. I think that's a very good point. And we'll circle back to that. The Chassam Sofer is asserting that
this is a lav habami klal aseh.
That's one assertion. Right, or at least the Chassam Sofer is not saying that. I'm saying that Shvius is a lav habami klal aseh, and that's precisely what Nathan is challenging. Maybe it's not a lav habami klal aseh. Okay, fine, good. That's what we're turned to. Let's say it is a lav habami klal aseh. So, A, the Minchas Chinuch could possibly just reject the assertion that a lav habami klal aseh is a lo sa'aseh. That's one possibility. Who says it's a lo sa'aseh? Take a look at the Rambam and source. The Minchas Chinuch, in contrast to the Chassam Sofer, who's treating it as akin to a lo sa'aseh.
Well, it's an aseh that's akin to a lo sa'aseh. Right.
Right. So maybe the Minchas Chinuch would reject the assertion that it is akin to a lo sa'aseh at all. It's just an aseh.
It's a regular aseh.
Yeah, it happens to be violated in a strange way. It's in that regard, it's different from other mitzvot aseh. Who said that should impact its halachic status? Take a look at the Rambam in source number 4. The mitzvah alaminches. We alluded to this before. We read this before. Kohen gadol is a mitzvah to marry a b'sula. V'hu omro yisparach. The Torah says, v'hu isha b'sula ha'yikach. And the Kohen should marry a b'sula. B'beyer amru osahe Rabbi Akiva mamzer afilu mechai ve'aseh. So that's a very important gemara about the scope of mamzeros. Rabbi Akiva has a far more expansive definition of mamzeros than the one that we accept the halacha. But fine, that's immaterial for us right now. Very important principle, but immaterial for us right now. Bold, ubeiruzek shiyah koin gadol ba al bilti besula. What is the halacha? How does he fulfill this mitzvah? The mitzvah is, if he has a relationship with a woman who is a non-besula, shehi asura lo paaseh, she is prohibited to him through an aseh. Very, very strange language, right? It's almost it almost seems paradoxical. Shehi asura lo paaseh. That relationship is prohibited, sounds awful lot like losa ase. She's prohibited through an ase. And then the Rambam concludes after the period, shashoresh etzleinu lav abba miklal ase, because the Rambam says, I have this general principle that a lav abba miklal ase should be treated like an ase. Now, Chassam Sofer was certainly aware of this Rambam. Was he saying that even for this Rambam, it would be, Nashim would be obligated? Or is he saying, no, perhaps not all Rishonim agree with this Rambam, perhaps there are others who disagree and would say that it is not treated like an aseh. I'm not entirely sure. But you have the Rambam here saying explicitly that a lav habami klal aseh is an aseh. If you look in source number 5, you'll see Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlow's comment on lo sa'aseh reish samach dalet of Sefer HaMitzvos of Rav Sadyagon. Sefer HaMitzvos of Rav Sadyagon is a pretty interesting halachic work. It's really like a poem. It's kind of impenetrable. It's very hard to determine. It's not like the Rambam, who very carefully details to you what the 613 mitzvot are. Or like Sefer HaChinuch, again, who tells you very clearly, this is mitzvah 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. The Sefer Mitzvot of Rav Sadyagon is like this poetic essay, if you will, that somehow goes through the 613 mitzvahs through allusions and the like. So the classic work on this was written by Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlo, who wrote this just masterwork on, as a commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs of Rav Sadia Gaon. Usually, almost always, the overwhelming majority of the time, when somebody is quoting the Sefer HaMitzvahs of Rav Sadia Gaon, they are quoting the footnotes on the Sefer HaMitzvahs of Rav Sadia Gaon. They're quoting Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlo. It's the kind of thing where there's like one word in Rav Sadia Gaon, and then there's 10 pages in footnotes and commentary from Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlo. And he uses it as a springboard to discuss many, many very, very fundamental issues in halacha. It almost functions as like one of these works that are devoted to Klalei HaMitzvah. You have certain works that are devoted to general principles. I'm very fond of the Shirashim of the Rambam Sefer Mitzvos, which is what I was giving Chaburas on to the Kolal. You have the Psicha Kolalis of the Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim is, again, another classic master halachic work, where the Prima Gadim, before he begins his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, he gives you what he calls the Psicha Kolalis, this general introduction, where he goes through broad principles of mitzvos. So, Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlo often uses the Sefer Mitzvos of Rav Sadia Gaon to discuss such matters as well. And he has a very long treatment of this whole issue in Los Asei Reis Samach Dalet. He argues that an important issue on this is the Tosas Rid. Source number 5, Agam B'Tosas Rid, B'Sugya D'Yom HaSham, Kasat D'Shamur, Ein B'Isser Achilaso, El Alab Abba Michlal Asei Ayin Sham. Here he's also dealing with Shemitah issues. Let's say you had peros that were Shamur, that were guarded, and then you eat them afterwards. What is that? He says it's Alab Abba Michlal Asei. The gambis fiche shvias lasso from the Israeli lasso mita raisa ein behen isur lab sviche shvias svichim the produce of the field major machlokas tanoim as to whether that's asur mita raisa mita rabbanon. He says those who hold it's asur mita raisa hold that it is not a lav tare lo nafgalon isur and element chesev hein lo nizrav lo naisof as to asenu, because it is never formulated as a lav, it maintains the status of asay. So again, your official Perlo is arguing for the Tosas Rid, as the Rambam kind of articulates in his principle in the Sefer Mitzvos, asay lamed ches, that a lav haba miklal asay should be treated as an asay. Again, despite the Chasam Sofer arguing that nashim should be obligated in a lav haba miklal asay. Okay, so that's question number one: should we treat such an issue, such an isur, as a lav or as an asay? The weight of the evidence in the Rishonim seems to be to treat it as an asay, but again, we do have this comment in the Chasam Sofer. That's number one. Number two: is it possible that there are certain lavin, that women are not obligated in? In general, we would think that women are obligated in all mitzvos losa asay. But are there some mitzvos losa asay that perhaps women are not obligated in? I've been telling you all along, right, that many of our sugyas lie on the crossroads of two separate topics, right? So here we have lav haba miklal asay, and we also have the question of pitur nashim min hamitzvos, or mitzvos asay shezman grama. Take a look at the Sefer HaChinuch and Mitzvah Ches. Shelo lahosir mibasar ha-pesach. We have a mitzvah here, a losa asay, to not leave over the Pesach. Now, before we go any further, and this is going to be important for the end of our shir, which is, again, it's more of a tangential topic, but it's a very, very important, fundamental, and rich one. We have a losa asay not to leave over the Besara Pesach. You're supposed to finish the Karban Pesach. Don't leave it over until morning. Now that mitzvah is in a sense the opposite of our discussion of Lav Haba Miklal Asay. Why is it the opposite of Lav Haba Miklal Asay?
It's Lota Asay making you do something.
Good. Okay, good. We are, our Lav Haba Miklal Asay is a mitzvah asay that is violated actively. Lo so siru mimenu ad boker is a mitzvah lo sa asay that is violated passively. It is, in a sense, the opposite case of ours. But insofar as it is the opposite case of ours, it may be instructive. And certainly, again, at the end of this year, when we look at two very important Rambam, verses 6 and 7, we'll see that the paradigm there could potentially at least offer a model for what we are dealing with here. What do we call it, by the way, when you have a lo sa asay? Lav she'en bo maisa. Lav she'en bo maisa. Take a look at what the Sefer HaChinuch says in Mitzvah Ches. Shlolo hosir mibasara pesach, you have prohibition of leaving over pesara pesach. Shlolo hosir klom mibasara pesach l'macharaso, shuhu yom chamisha azar benisan. You should not leave over any of the pesar ha-pesach, any of the meat of the carbon pesach, until the next day, until the 15th of Nisan. Shneamar v'lo sasiru mimenu ad boker, because the Torah says don't leave it over until morning. And says the Sefer HaChinuch, v'noheges v'zucharim uv'nekevos v'zman habayis. It is a mitzvah incumbent upon men and women, Bizman Abayis. Now that Bizman Abayis comment is also an interesting comment. And it's part of the whole discourse about bringing Karban Pesach Bizman Hazeh. There was an effort among some of the Gedolim in Europe, particularly with Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, to reinstitute the bringing of Karbanos. We have a whole discourse between Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer and the Chasam Sofer as to why not? Why shouldn't we be able to bring karbanos? Of course, the psak that is accepted in the end is that we cannot. But it was a whole discourse back and forth. Maybe we should be able to bring the carbon pesach. So that we'll assume the bezman habayis part we'll take for granted for now. But the Sefer HaChinuch also says bezacharim uvinakevos, that women are also obligated in this mitzvah, even though it is a lav she'ein bo maisa. Once again, this is almost like the flip side of our question. It presents as a losa asay, but how is it properly observed as an asay? Is it so obvious? Just like we're raising a question as to whether or not women should be obligated in lav bo miklal asay, you have the opposite question by lav she'ein bo maisa. And the Minchas Chinuch actually presents an argument to say that they should be exempt. Now, it's not directly the same as the analysis that we are offering here. He offers what you might call a tangential or side reason why they are exempt. But it's worth analyzing because his argument here would apply to both Lav She'im Bo Maisa and Lav Abba Miklal Asay. Take a look at what the Minchas Chinuch says in source number 2. Benuheges Bizchar Menukevos applies to men and women. Davar Zed, the mitzvah zon, Uheges Kam Benashim, Eino Davar Pashut Kokach. He says, this notion that women are obligated in this mitzvah, it's not so obvious to me, he says. Tzarech be'er rachav. It needs a lot of analysis and explanation. Ulecha'ora kivan dekayim ala in second line. Duchom mitzvah losa asay. Bein she'az man grama, bein she'enaz man grama nashim chayavos. Presumably the motivation of the Sefer HaChinuch, the logic of the Sefer HaChinuch, is that because we generally hold that women are obligated in all mitzvahs losa asay, hu adin kan. So to here, it's a losa asay. Lo so siru mimenu ad boker. And therefore they're obligated. V'chim v'var v'rambam, perakid beiz mihalchos akum, alacha gimel. Duchom mitzvah losa asay, sheba Torah, third line of source number 2. So the Rambam outlines a general principle that women are obligated in all mitzvahs lo sa'aseh, aside from those pertaining to facial hair and the like. And from the fact that the Rambam just leaves it as a general principle, it seems like there's no distinction between different types of lo sa'aseh. Women are obligated in mitzvahs lo sa'aseh, period. But once again, he says, he reiterates, this needs further explanation. Fourth line of source number 2, Kvar Amar al Mevocha Zo Agon Prima Gadim B'Psicha L'Orachayim. I referenced a moment ago the masterful Psicha Kolalis of the Prima Gadim. He says the Prima Gadim already wrote on this issue in his Psicha to Orachayim. Tinei Mevor B'Kiddushin Lamed Hei, because the Gemara Kiddushin Lamed Hei says, Ahod Mevor B'Mishnah D'Chol Makom Losa Asei Nashim Chayavos, fifth line. Now which we said that women are always obligated in Mitzvos Losa Asei. Amrin on Minahan Imili, the Gemara says, where do we know this from? Amrav Yehuda Amarav, there are a lot of Rashi Tevos here, as is kind of typical of the Minchas Chinuch. Amrav Yehuda Amarav, V'chein Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael. Where do we learn it from? So Rabbi Yehuda reports in the name of Rav. The Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael reports, Amar Kra, Ish O Isha Ki Ya'asu. The Torah says, when a man or woman violates one of these prohibitions, Hish V'hakos of Isha L'Ish, then the next three words are critical, L'chol Onshin Shebatorah. Men and women are both obligated, equally obligated in all onshin shebatorah. What's the Minchas Chinuch's argument going to be next? In a case where there is no onesh, perhaps women are exempt. We know that both by alav she'ein bo maisa, one of the rules of punishment in Beis Din is that it needs to have a maisa. Perhaps if it's alav she'ein bo maisa, where there's no punishment, women should be exempt. Perhaps if it's alav haba miklal asay, which also has no punishment, women should be exempt, right? And that is the argument that the Minchas Chinuch presents here. So without going into all the further details, that could be a second reason why women are not obligated in the mitzvah asay of Shemitah.
Is a lav she'ein bo asay exempt from punishment?
Lav haba miklal asay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not punishment in Shemayim, but it's punishment from Onesh Beis Din, yeah.
Beis Din could punish you for not doing an asay.
Beis Din can force you to do an asay, but Beis Din does not punish you for not doing an asay. In other words, you say I'm not putting on tefillin. Let's assume that tefillin is a mitzvah b'chol yom. That's also not so obvious, but let's assume. That's definitely the standard assumption, right? Or you say I'm not going to eat matzah on Pesach. Right? That's probably a better and easier example. So Beis Din can beat you up until you eat matzah on Pesach, right? Fine. But let's say the day after the Seder, Tes Zayin Nisan, two witnesses come and say, we spent the entire night with him and he did not eat matzah. Is there any onesh in that instance?
No.
Yeah, there's onesh from Shemayim. That's what I said. You know, Hashem doesn't like when you do that. And again, you have to answer for your sins in the Masechta Derakiyah. But Beis Din will not punish you for the failure to perform a mitzvah saseh. Okay? So far we have two reasons why Women, this lava bami klal asei argument may not work. Sorry?
He said, will not punish you for failing to do a mitzvah asei.
Correct. Correct. So we have two potential reasons why women may not be obligated. Number one is lav habami klal asei. Maybe it's treated as an asei, not as a losa asei. This whole discussion in the Chasam Sofer and the Rambam. Number two, maybe even if it's a losa asei, it fits into a category of losa asei that women are exempt from. The Menachas Chinuch is making an argument to say that if you have a losa asei that women are exempt from, then perhaps a losa asei that doesn't have punishment, women will be exempt from that losa asei. So you could say, even if we accept the premise of the Chasam Sofer that it's a losa asei, perhaps it is a losa asei that women are exempt from. So I think this Menachas Chinuch would be sufficient reason to say that it's not. This could be another reason why the Menachas Chinuch doesn't quote that argument as well, because he holds that even if it's a losa asei, even if it's a lav, women are exempt, or at least potentially exempt, because of the fact that there's no onesh. And number three, what's the real kicker? Goes back to exactly what we were saying at the very beginning of the year that Nathan was pointing out earlier. Is this really a lav habami klal asei for the Menachas Chinuch? In other words, is it true that you violate this mitzvah asei through activity? If you understood the mitzvah asei of Shemitah as doing agricultural labor, then yeah, it's true. The only way to violate the mitzvah asei is to actively pick up your shovel, pick up your spade, pick up your hoe, and start working the land. But if you recall, the Menachas Chinuch was the one who championed the cause of saying that the mitzvah asei of Shemitah is about ensuring the restful character of the land. He was the one who said that, in theory, somebody else is doing work and you don't stop them, right? That is a violation of the mitzvah asei of Shemitah too, because the mitzvah asei of Shemitah is to preserve the restful character of Shemitah, to preserve the rest of the land itself. So in theory, let's construct a scenario. I am sitting on my back porch and I see someone walk into my field and start spreading seeds and irrigating and doing all the work that is prohibited in Shemitah. And I decide to just sit back. I'm tired or I'm happy that they're doing the work, and I sit back and I watch them do it. According to the Menachas Chinuch, what have I just violated? The mitzvah says, "Save Shemitah." And have I violated it actively? No. No, I violated it passively. So specifically, it could be the Menachas Chinuch l'shitaso, because the Menachas Chinuch is the one who maintains that the whole prohibition of the mitzvah says, "Save Shemitah," or the whole, I'm sorry, imperative of the mitzvah says, "Save Shemitah," is to maintain the restful character of Shemitah itself. That is indeed something that can be violated passively. And once it can be violated passively, it can no longer be considered a lav haba miklal aseh. So
does that apply for a woman as well as a man?
Right. At least in theory, right? Mm-hmm. Again, that's the character of the mitzvah, right? So even though this is a
separate mitzvah, or is
it, I'm sorry?
Is beer a separate mitzvah?
Yeah. Beer is a separate mitzvah. Totally separate mitzvah, yes.
So they're still chayiv in the beer, is what you're trying to say. They're still
probably not. Again, it's a mitzvah cessation of mangrum. Oh, you're saying according to this last argument.
Yes,
correct. That would be
enough.
That would
trying to say.
Yeah,
no,
Daniel.
The whole proof from the Chasam Sofer, I don't understand.
I'm expanding the Chasam Sofer. He never applies it to our mitzvah asei of Shemitah. He's presenting the argument about lava bami klal asei in general. He does not apply it to mitzvah asei of Shemitah. That's our expansion. We're taking
talking about an asei of notes, of beer.
Correct. That is not the asei that we are dealing with. That's not the original mitzvah asei to observe Shemitah, to desist from agricultural labor. He's dealing with a separate mitzvah asei of Shemitah. We're taking the principle of the Chasam Sofer and extrapolating. But AB, that's a fine point. In other words, one of the nafkaminas between these three approaches that I just offered for why the Menachas Chinuch does not marshal that argument would potentially be whether or not women are obligated in biur. So again, you have three reasons. You have a third possible reason why women might be obligated in the mitzvah asei of Shemitah, because it's a lav haba miklal asei. But the Sefer HaChinuch, the Menachas Chinuch himself, never marshals that argument, and I'm suggesting three possible reasons why he does not. Now, just to conclude, again, this is not directly on our topic, but I think it's really just an astonishing Rambam that really highlights some of the themes that we're talking about. Here, the Rambam is not dealing with lav haba miklal asei. He is dealing with the opposite case, what we called lav she'ein bo maisa, right? Lav haba miklal asei is an asei that you violate actively. Lav she'ein bo maisa is a losa asei that you violate passively, okay? Take a look at what the Rambam says. I'm literally just going to read to you the Rambam in Hilchos Gzeila Va'aveda Perek Aleph Halacha Tes. Let's start with what the problem is in the Rambam, and then let's see if we can potentially resolve it. And this is actually fitting. It's in Yana D'Yoma. It's on this week's parsha, the Aseret HaDibros. Here the Rambam is discussing the prohibition of Lo Sachmod. Thou shalt not covet. Don't covet the possessions of your friend. Ram says as follows. Again, I'm just going to read the Rambam. Anyone who covets or desires the servant, the maidservant, the house, the possessions of his friend, or any matter of material possession that he can purchase from him. In theory, he could purchase his servants, he could purchase his house, he could purchase his kalim, his material belongings. And he really, really pressures this person. He puts very, very intense pressure on this person to sell it to him. And ultimately, the person relents to the pressure and does sell it to him. Says the Rambam, second line of source number 6, fourth word. Aval pisha nosan lo damim rabim. Even though you paid the person for that which you purchased, you really want their house. You put intense pressure on them to sell. You paid them more than market value, more than Zillow estimates the house to be worth. Even though you paid them that amount, you still violated a lo sa'ase because the Torah says, don't covet the possessions of your neighbor. Now here is where the Rambam's critical lines come into play. This is source number 6, second line after the comma. Be'ein lokin alav zeh, mipnei she'ein bo maisa. You don't receive malchus on this because it's alav she'ein bo maisa. The Rambam continues, fifth line after the comma, for third line after the comma. You haven't violated this lo sa'aseh until you take the object that you coveted and desired. As the Torah says, lo sachmod kesef v'zahav aleihem v'lo kach talach. The Torah says, you shall covet those things and you will take them. Chimud v'lo kach talach. Chimud sheyesh bo maisa. What did the Torah prohibit? Chimud, coveting, sheyesh bo maisa, that has an activity. What's the problem in the Rambam?
Contradicted himself.
Why?
Because he said there's a ma'isa here, and at the beginning he said there was no ma'isa.
Right? The Rambam, within a single line, we get troubled when the Rambam in two different areas of Mishnah Torah contradicts himself. Right? There's a stira between a Rambam in Hilchos Gzeilah Aveda and another one all the way, I don't know, in Hilchos Sanhedrin. We get bothered by stiras in the Rambam that appear through all of Mishnah Torah. Here, it's a single line. The Rambam says to you, "Ain lokan alav zeh mipnei she'ein bo maisa." You don't receive malchus because it's alav she'ein bo maisa. Then he goes on to tell you, "Oh, when do you violate it? When you actively take the item from your friend, because the Torah says you need. Look at those last four words: chimud she'yesh bo maisa. You need a chimud that has an activity." The Ravid commenting in the second paragraph, source number 6, Asagas Ravid ve'ain lokan alav zeh she'ein bo maisa. Commenting on those words after the period, Aleph, Omer Avraham, Lo ra'isi davar tema gadol mizeh. Says, I've never seen something more astonishing than this. Mind you, the Ravid argues with the Rambam all the time, and he often has sharp words when he criticizes the Rambam. He's like, this one takes the cake. Heichan maisa gadol min etilas achefetz. What more maisa do you want than stealing the object? He says, I can give you other reasons why you would not receive malchus on lo sachmod, because you'd have to return it, and it's a lav shenita class A. I can give you other reasons why it's not going to have malchus. But to within the same breath tell me that it's a lav she'ein bo maisa, and say you only violate it when you have chimut she'yesh bo maisa? What in the world is the Rambam saying?
Maybe the lav is the desiring of it, the coveting it. That's what the lav is. Maybe it's a shear. At what point is it chemda? It's when you actually buy it. But
beautiful.
The problem is the...
Yeah, David, what were you going to say? Same thing?
I was going to say exactly the same thing. That paying too much for a house is not allowed, but paying too much for a house shows
excellent
the extent.
Right?
The
yeah, Joel.
The problem is once you buy it, it's not your friend's anymore. So you've kind of crossed the line. It turns into yours. It's not your friend's.
But is it lav she'ein bo maisa or is it lav she'yesh bo maisa? Which one is it?
Define maisa.
No, it's ain't bo maisa. But when you buy it, there's a maisa, but it's not that maisa, because it's not his anymore. You're not desiring his. Once you buy it, it's yours.
But if you buy it,
that's quite a chop. In other words, but again, the maisa of acquisition by necessity happens before. You almost say like a gito b'yodo kan b'ayin ke'echa, that the moment he acquires it.
That's very. You can't do one without getting the other.
That's a very creative idea. It's a very creative idea that he's saying.
Once you do it, it's not desiring his friend's thing anymore.
It's a creative idea. I'm not sure it works because you have to do the Maisa Kinyan while it is still his, right? So I'm not sure that it works. I think the more intuitive explanation is what David and Danny were suggesting a moment ago. What is the prohibition here? The prohibition is making the purchase, That's not the prohibition. The prohibition is the intense desire, the loss of control, this intense desire for this object that led to this single-minded focus that led you to lose control and deeply pressure this person to do it. Now, the Rambam is saying that a shiur in that, how far must you be willing to go such that it becomes problematic? A fleeting thought, oh, I'd like to have that. I'd like to have my friend's Ferrari. That's not a violation of Los Achmod. We don't necessarily encourage those thoughts, but a fleeting thought, we're going to say that's a violation of Los Achmod. It needs to be such an all-consuming desire that you are led to activity. But it's not the activity per se that's the prohibition, but it is the lav that is the prohibition. Now, there's an additional assumption here that the principle of lav she'in bo maisa is based on the fundamentals of how you violate rather than just the pragmatic question of whether or not there is an activity. And that seems to be so or another Rambam in source number 7. Again, we're not going to get into this, but perhaps one of the greatest paradigms or classic examples of lav she'in bo maisa is bayira bayimatze, owning chametz on Pesach, right? You violate that passively, right? Ordinarily speaking, if somebody doesn't do mechiras chametz, they don't get rid of their chametz. Do they receive malchus? No, it's a lav she'in bo maisa. What if you got up and purchased chametz on Pesach? The Rambam there says, you receive malchus. Now, it's true that you're doing an activity, but we just got finished saying that fundamentally the prohibition is not the purchase. Fundamentally, the prohibition is the ownership. So there seems to be a contradiction between these two Rambams, and how we resolve that is a much larger topic. That will be a future Shabbos HaGadol. But you do have this principle in the Rambam of lav she'in bo maisa somehow being categorically different, even when there pragmatically is a maisa. So why do I demonstrate that? Again, it is the flip case of our case of lav haba miklal aseh. What the Rambam here in Gzeila va'aveda is telling you is that a lav she'in bo maisa doesn't just happen to lack an activity. He's saying that it is a categorically different form of lav. And even in instances when it has an activity that accompanies it, because the character of the lav is so different, because it almost has the bearings of an assay, it is not going to have malchus, even if pragmatically speaking you had an activity. And on the flip side, one can going back to our original argument, one can claim that in an almost opposite way, a lav haba miklal assay has the characteristics of a losa assay, even as the Torah formulates it as mitzvah assay, and that could be one additional and final reason why Nashim Rechayavos in the mitzvah assay Shazman Grama of the apparent mitzvah assay Shazman Grama of Shemitah. That concludes that topic for us. We will pick up with Maseches Gittin, again, possibly with some more, again, principal topics, possibly, and things like that from the Gemara Gittin Lamed Vav. But we will certainly then make our way to the first parak of Maseches Gittin Daf Beis. And I look forward to continuing that limud with you all. Shkayach, everyone. Thank you. Yeah.